Hi, this is Manton Reese.
And this is Daniel Jalkut.
And this is Core Intuition. Did you get this at Poundland?
So, Manton, do you ever sign up for that mailbox app where you had to wait for like 400 or 500,000 people to get in line and get the software before you?
I didn't. By the time I went to check it out, I guess I was already tens of thousands of people behind in line. And also the app doesn't really apply to me so much since it's so focused on Gmail and I don't use Gmail as my primary mail server or web interface.
Right.
So I love the UI in the app. I love the idea that they are trying to do something different with a mail client, but that particular implementation didn't really fit.
Well, I got in line and I mean, I was more than tens of thousands. I was literally something like 600,000 behind.
Wow.
And then, I sort of got in line just because that's what you do. And,
there's a line over there. It must be good.
But yeah, I don't use Gmail either, really. And, I looked at it the other day because, well, the reason we're talking about this is they were acquired by Dropbox. And, you know, I guess Dropbox acquires anything that has box in the name. So surely Mapbox is next. And you should make something called something box. Tweetbox. That should have been the name of Tweet Library.
Search box.
Yeah.
Yep.
But only after learning about the acquisition did I go back and actually launch the app and say, oh, I wonder where I am in line. And oh, lo and behold, all these weeks later, an acquisition later, I'm in the fold.
All right.
But I got to the point where it said, you know, sign in with your Google account. And I was like, I'll move on.
Then you didn't do anything.
I didn't even try it. I mean, I knew exactly what I was getting into. But then when I got to that point, that friction and that reminder that I'm not really the right customer sent me off. So,
well, maybe not too far from now, that first screen will change to say, sign in with your Dropbox.
Hey,
I love this acquisition because obviously the name is a perfect fit, but the thing that is missing from Mailbox, I think, is not depending on Gmail. And I can imagine Dropbox offering a mail service as part of their pro plan, right? I mean, I already pay, I don't know how much, 10 bucks, whatever it is, a month for a certain amount of extra storage on Dropbox. I'm happy to do that. But they can continue to add bullet points to that paid plan to make the whole freemium model just work better. And mail could just be part of that. I can completely see that. Sign in with Dropbox, you have access to sort of a special Dropbox mail server and a special, you know, interface on top of that with Mailbox. Oh, it's very cool.
Yeah, I think Dropbox is a stealth juggernaut.
Right.
I mean, they are coming from this place where they were famously dismissed by, wasn't it Steve Jobs who said that it was just a feature, not a product?
Right.
Well, that feature sure has legs because it's like they're building around it very, very slowly, right? Like they're more or less still just a folder on your Mac or your iPhone that you put files in. But they just seem to buoyed by their success on that simple feature. They just keep growing. And then what I've noticed recently is they're acquiring stuff and they're also hiring lots of interesting people like Guido Van Rossum, the inventor of Python.
Yeah.
And then who did they hire just this past week? It's slipping my mind, but it was something big. Our audience knows it, even if we don't. But I think that they are quietly just like what you're suggesting. They could become something kind of like big, like a big social network, essentially, or a big social network or a big, you know, services network. It's kind of hard to say. In a sense, it's kind of comparable to ADN or app.net, but...
Yeah, I think it's closer to app.net than anything in some ways because, well, first of all, the model is kind of the same. You know, you pay for more stuff, and it's not an ad-driven business like Google, obviously. They got Sync so right at the beginning, and it was so rock solid. Obviously, they are everywhere. They're in iOS apps all over the place. A lot of people support it either as the primary sync or kind of an alternate sync if iCloud isn't working. But it worked so well that I think that they're going to be able to layer things on top of it and just kind of, yeah, just continue to grow what they're doing and expand out into other things that make sense.
Well, I did a quick search, and the other hire recently was the designer from Facebook. Facebook's like top mobile designer, Rasmus mm-hmm. Anderson.
Okay.
And he was also the designer for Spotify before that. So It's kind of interesting that they're kind of swinging for the stars with some of these hires. You know, maybe they're not even doing that intentionally. I sort of quipped on Twitter about this, that maybe if you are a company like Dropbox that's just making a product that everybody loves and not pissing people off every day, then maybe everybody kind of talented in the Bay Area wants to come work for you.
Yeah, I can definitely see the appeal. I have no idea how big the company is now, but I imagine they've got some folks there.
And they're located in San Francisco, which is a distinction, you know, in the Bay Area for people who want to live in a city. I think a lot of people enjoy working at Twitter for this reason. It's like a lot of the jobs in San Francisco Bay Area are located down in the valley. So that could be a draw for something. Sorry, for a company like Dropbox.
Yeah, definitely.
Anyway, kind of off on a tangent there, but the interesting thing to me is how these little services with, you know, they gain our trust with our account, and then they can, you know, maybe we have an account, maybe we pay them some money. But then they just start adding on features to keep us in the fold, I guess. That's really happened with Amazon for me, for instance. It's like, oh, okay, now I had an account there for what? To order a book in 1995. And then that same account, I think, is now capable of hosting my S3 backups and
right.
all this other stuff.
Yeah, it makes you wonder what Dropbox will do next. I mean, they could certainly keep focusing on what they are and then expand into mail. But then they could, there's other kind of obvious places they could go, even just in terms of data and syncing. Like when we were talking about sync and implementing it in our own apps before, one of the things we talked about is like the difference kind of between a file system sync and files and then smaller bits of data syncing around. Things that like SimpleNote was pretty good at, the Parse API is good at, iCloud, in theory, is good at. And I could see Dropbox offering some kind of service like that. That is, it's sync, and it fits perfectly with what Dropbox is about, but it's not, it exists kind of outside the file system, so smaller bits of data that you want to sync, or notes. So Evernote is obviously a big app that supports, you know, the idea of just saving notes and organizing them and searching them. Google Keep came out last week, and I haven't tried this, but it's the same idea, right? You can just quickly put some notes in, and then they're searchable, and you can kind of organize them.
Yeah, you haven't tried it because you're just desperately trying to sever your last tie to Google, right?
Yeah, basically.
Well, the timing of this coming out with a new service from Google where they implore customers to trust them with the storage of all their important keepsakes is pretty bad. I'm of two minds about this. Obviously, it's pretty bad if you're a nerd who follows the news like us and you know that Google Reader was important to people and then they canceled it with a few months' notice and don't seem to care that lots of people relied upon it.
Mm-hmm.
If you're an average consumer, maybe Google is just the cool company that not only makes your cool Android phone work, but also is giving you this new cool service.
Yeah, maybe.
I mean, there's so many hundreds of millions of people who are outside the realm of, oh, look what Google did this week, you know?
Yeah, but I can see, like, so let's say Dropbox had launched something like this last week instead of Google. I'd be all over it. Like I said, I already pay Dropbox. I use it for everything. In fact, I use Dropbox for syncing notes with the Just Notes app. and with other apps on iOS, even though it's not actually a perfect fit using the file system for small bits of notes. I mean, it's good. You have text files. They'll last forever. That's great. But if you're just throwing some text in something that you want to save, putting them in a text file is not necessarily the best choice. Having a special service on top of that that was just for little snippets of text would be even better. So if Dropbox had announced something like that, oh, that'd be great. And it would fit really well with, I think, the kind of things they want to do.
Right. Well, I think what you just said, we have to acknowledge, in order to stave off the giant flood of email and Twitter responses that try to enlighten us to notational velocity, we know what notational velocity is, and it does let you keep lots of little notes and little files.
I used it for years, actually.
And then, so just to say, it can be done, but yeah,
Well, let me explain what I mean. So I don't know how many files I have offhand. Actually, I could probably check. But, you know, I have hundreds of these text files, right? They don't have titles. They're not like text files where you say new document in text edit and you call it something and then you put the contents in it, right? The content is the most important thing. You don't have to name it. You don't have to worry about where you're going to put them. You just start typing text. And behind the scenes, it's automatically saved. So in my case, I did used to use Simple Note. I did used to use Notational Velocity and also Envy Alt, which is the fork of it that has other features. Really great. I switched to just Notes and kept using Simple Note. And then eventually I switched to using Dropbox because I wanted everything just, I don't know. I use Dropbox a lot. I wanted everything in one place.
Yeah.
But it isn't perfect because once you have thousands of notes, then you have a single folder that has all these files, and it becomes a little bit more difficult to manage, mm-hmm. I think. And if you have a kind of a higher level service that manages notes, it can be more efficient. It can organize things by tag or queue, you know, it can search things. I don't know. I think there's things you can do with sort of a database centric view of notes that makes more sense.
Agreed. So I guess the question is, with this Google Keep thing, it's whether obviously the nerds are a little bit suspicious of Google now as far as their commitment to products. But I said most of the public probably doesn't care. But then there's the work of people like Om Malik, who is journalist with a fairly large reach. I guess if enough people like him complain openly about it, then you get like the sentiment permeates into the public. And it's kind of like what happened with Apple, with its, you know, this people harping on Apple, like supposedly or allegedly not innovating. And it's like, I go to a, you know, party for my kid, and other parents who are like not techies are like, oh, well, have you noticed that Apple doesn't innovate anymore? And it's like, how do you even have this opinion? And it's because like journalists have hammered this idea. But maybe something similar can happen. Maybe that's what Google needs to be concerned about, is something similar could happen if enough people write about, you know, this really nerds only concern. Anyway, Google Keep looks like this is something that there's another sign that like all of these kind of monolithic web services oriented companies have this like different product categories they want to get into, right? It's easy to see why a lot of these companies that have your account information would want to try to give you, you know, more and more new features like this to try to keep you in their ecosystem. And, Dropbox acquiring Mailbox, maybe they're going to, like you say, add a new mail service. Google does this all the time. And I guess this is with Keep. It's just a question of whether they can keep doing this, keep adding services and expect people to trust that they're going to be around. And like, you know, someone like you, Manton, you are, I think, down to your last service, Google Docs, right?
Yep.
And it's just a question of how many times, because I it's not just this recent Google Reader thing. It's like Google seems to kind of like fire and forget quite a bit.
Yeah. Have you seen the Google Graveyard website?
Oh, right. Yes, I have.
Marco Arment linked this last weekend. Man, there's a lot of apps that Google has launched and then quit, more than I would have guessed,
or acquired and then killed. And yeah, it's not a good reputation to have. And it, you know, fault Apple all you will for sort of just kind of like boringly going down and iterating on phones and OSs. But Apple doesn't have like a giant list of things that they've launched and killed. Am I going to regret saying that? I mean, they have
they have some high profile things they've launched and killed, but
yes,
not nearly as many.
And that they're not all over the board. I mean, almost all of Apple's things that they've launched and killed are some variation of iCloud.
Right. And also they could all be, you could argue that they were all failures in some way.
Right.
And I liked a lot of the stuff they killed, but they were lacking in some way. And Google seems to have no problem killing things that are well loved and that are pretty good. You know, they're successes. But right. They didn't fit for one reason or another into Google's view of the world, you know, right now, this month. And, you know, I actually wonder if this is just the beginning of Google sort of simplifying and closing off even more things. I don't say that just because I don't trust Google and I think they're going to kill everything because they're evil. I really do think they have their hands in too many different things, right? They wanted so much to compete in every little area and to control or at least have a competition in all these different products that, like you said, they fire and forget. They launch these apps and they have no problems. They have such a big company and they have so much money. They have no problem investing all these little things without necessarily needing to make money on any particular one. And it just seems like at some point they've got to refocus and pick the top 5 or 10 things they do well. And that's enough. And kill off even more of these little side projects.
Well, I think it's just the age old suspicion, or not suspicion, but the age old concern about Google being a company that mostly provides free products and mostly makes money from advertising. In the past, you could say like, it's kind of a problem that you have to evaluate all the products from Google in terms of what they're getting out of it, right? Because like, Something from Apple, you can say, what are they getting out of it? They're getting my money, a lot of it. And with yes. Google, it's like, well, like I could sit here and speculate. Well, are they going to kill analytics? I don't pay them for analytics. Well, no, because they like having their finger in all the statistics about what gets loaded and what gets read, right? So you can sort of like imagine, advertising company, analytics, they'll probably keep that because they're getting something out of that. But I might have made the same argument about Reader. So it's just really hard to know. And like that's why it's like when you get down to it, it's like, well, at least with an Android phone, you're paying some money for something and you kind of know that they're going to keep working on Android if they're charging for it. But I don't know.
You know, I was thinking on Google's strategy here. You know the movie Sneakers, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Classic, great movie, one of my favorites. But there's this line where he's like, you know, why do you need the little black box or whatever? And he's like, well, we didn't want so-and-so to have it, so we must have it. You know, we don't know why we want it. We just have to have it so no one else has it. And
right.
I kind of feel like Google has that attitude of, we don't know why we're building these things, but we're doing it so that these other people don't control
right
this particular product, so we must also have it. And I don't know if that's a great strategy.
Yeah, we need to have feed burner because feed burning is a thing that we heard about. But then that's another example where it's like, how long is feed burner going to be around? It sounds like that's on the way out now too, right?
Yeah.
So anyway, yeah, it's very similar, I think, to their hiring strategy too. Has been hire people who are very talented and then figure out what to do with them. And that's kind of the same approach you're describing with your theory about the products. It's like, well, just get into every business that seems like it might be meaningful and then back out when we decide we don't care.
Thanks this week to Crashlytics for sponsoring this episode. Crashlytics is a crash reporting framework for iOS. So it has a well-designed web UI, has a Mac app for monitoring crashes and configuring your app. And it's easy to get started. It's free at crashlytics.com. You can add the framework to your app. And then when your app crashes on your customers' devices, you'll get notified. You'll be able to see where the crash occurred in your app. So great service. And a couple weeks ago for South by Southwest, I was able to meet some of these guys. They were down in Austin, and they threw a little party for developers and was able to talk with them and talk with other developers who are using Crashlytics or thinking about it. And great service. Really happy to have them as a sponsor again.
Yeah, so how was that party down there? What was it big? A lot of people, were they talking about crashes, or was it just kind of a social environment?
Yeah, mostly just kind of meeting folks, and they rented out kind of a floor in the museum downtown, and you know, it's kind of, there's a lot of, with South by Southwest, there's a lot of parties on the sidelines that aren't directly part of the conference, but that people go over and take a break, have a drink, talk to some folks, and so it was good. I haven't attended the conference itself in a couple years, so it was nice to go down and meet those guys and, you know, talk to other folks, catch up with other developers.
Cool. Well, it's really clear from stuff like this that they're, you know, having whole parties at South by Southwest, that they're still obviously very dedicated to the Crashlytics product. So it seems like they're full steam ahead developing this thing. So it's great to see the progress continuing. Thanks again, Crashlytics, for sponsoring the show.
And you can check it out at crashlytics.com. So I've been posting my blog more often, trying to post every day. And one thing I posted that I saw a couple of days ago was Don McAllister had this post on his blog that Apple hasn't had any product announcements recently. And he said he's feeling twitchy about this, like nervous, like that, right. That why, what's going on? Why this time last year we had, you know, what is it? The iPad 3 or something else. I don't know. We had a couple announcements and now there hasn't been anything in a little while. So is this any cause for concern? Should we be panicking?
Well, it's just, it seems like that's the standard behavior in evaluating Apple these days, is like, what can we find to be nervous about with Apple, right? Tim Cook has the hardest job. He's got to manage this extremely successful company while being second guessed for everything that he does or doesn't do, right? In the absence of Steve Jobs, it's now like, oh, we don't know. He's only added tens of billions of dollars to the bottom line over the 2 years he's been in charge.
Well, and last year was such a huge year in terms of new products. Right. I mean, I haven't compared 2012 to 11 and 10 and earlier, but I would say that last year had more new products than the year before or the year before that, right, alone.
Yeah, I don't know. It's funny. I am so not tuned to expect new product announcements like at specific times that when Don brought this up, it was just like, oh yeah, that's a good point. Actually, there hasn't been any new announcement this year, but it doesn't make me particularly nervous. I think that there's maybe less of a regimented schedule for product debuts than people have maybe assumed. I guess you could say it's worth noting that they have had so many announcements in past years. They've always had something like on the burner ready to announce. So does it mean something that there is evidently nothing on the burner right now? Or does it mean that what they're working on, what everybody's like heads down focused on, is something really big?
Yeah, I have no idea. I'm kind of happy about not anything new to deal with, right, this month. I feel like they're so aggressive with the release schedule. It's a lot to keep up with. And, you know, if there's new APIs every year, new products, new hardware, new screen resolutions every 6 months, yeah, it's tiring. I'd be perfectly happy with them relaxing the release schedule a little bit. That isn't likely to happen, but at least right now, we're kind of in this nice quiet period where there's not a lot of activity. I think that's a good thing.
I suspect what we're going to see is we're going to see an announcement of WWDC and teasers for all of the things that are coming, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like,
right.
So it'll be like, oh, new OS. You're not going to get away from it, Manton. And I think that that promise of a new OS every year is going to be more or less kept. So I think we'll see 10.9.
Yep.
Probably some new things are coming. The fact that they haven't been announced now I think it isn't too meaningful. I think we'll see it.
New desktop maybe at some point.
Yeah, I mean, and who knows what kind of features 10.9 is going to bring that maybe are also tied to new hardware attributes. Like we had new stuff with 10.8, like that power nap stuff, right?
Oh, yeah.
Wasn't that all tied to, I don't know if it was meaningfully tied to the hardware, but I seem to recall that it was.
It only worked on certain hardware for sure.
Yeah.
Same thing with like AirPlay mirroring and some of the other modern things, but that doesn't really require the developer to do that much, right? Or maybe my apps just don't need PowerNap, but
yeah.
Were there any APIs as part of that?
I don't remember. I mean, I didn't look at it carefully. So it seems like there should have been because you want third-party apps to be able to benefit from that. But
mm-hmm. I guess so.
I guess we'll have to talk to somebody who knows what they're talking about.
Well, I mean, you're right, though. There will be new hardware. There will be, you know, macOS 10, 10.9. There will be iOS 7. And yeah, that's life. We've got to deal with it. But yeah. At the moment, I'm okay. I'm not worried that there's nothing at this moment announced.
Right.
And of course, as you said, any day now, maybe any week or month, WWDC will probably be announced. Tickets will probably go on sale and sell out immediately. And I don't know. I hope we get one this year. I'm starting to.
I'm starting to
wonder.
I'm resigned to not getting one. I'm sort of hoping that it's announced when I'm sleeping and I don't get one. So that I don't have to like blame myself for not getting it.
Okay.
You know what I mean? Like I'm kind of hoping that like fate leads me to losing out just so that, I don't know, in some ways it would simplify things, but.
Set your expectations low and then you won't be totally disappointed if you don't get one for some reason. I think you'll probably get one.
I somehow managed to always get one because I think it has something to do with being at my computer 99.9% of the day. And
I do think that they will announce tickets going on sale in a different time zone this year. It's hard to know how much they listen to feedback and random tweets, but I think that was a legitimate complaint last year.
Yeah.
That a lot of the world that wanted to go was asleep. And I have a feeling they will offset the time to just, I don't know, pick a different time zone and announce it. Did you see that service? I mean, there's obviously a few different services people have for tracking when tickets go on sale. A lot of people have rolled their own thing. Did you see that one where you pay $1 or maybe it was £1 and
a pound, Manson, you've gotten so acculturated to
well this I think I remember this one being from the UK. But
did you get this at Poundland? Is this something you could buy at Poundland?
Right. The WWDC ticket receipt on the wall at Poundland. And so you pay $1 basically to get on the list, but the more you pay, the sooner you get notified the tickets go on sale.
That's gross. I don't like that at all.
It's the definitely evil genius kind of, I mean, it's probably working. I'm sure he's made some cash from this, but yeah. So just to get on the list is $1, but everyone has $1. So you know that you're not going to get notified very early if you just put that in. So then you're going to put in two or three.
I hate this kind of stuff. I want to punch this person.
just a developer. I forget. We'll have to link it up, but it's, I'm sure.
How much do I have to pay to punch him?
There needs to be an option. That,
£20.
Don't like this idea. So, but yeah, you can imagine though, it's this sort of auction, sort of bidding style thing, but it's blind. Of course, you don't know how much you have to pay to get to the top of the list. And so you can imagine people putting in $20, $50. I mean, the ticket price is $1,500. So
$1,600,
whatever. Right. Yeah. So if you want to go a few dollars here or there, doesn't matter that much. So you can imagine someone going kind of crazy with this and paying a lot of money to be notified.
Well, how do they handle, do you pay up front and then or do you only pay when you actually get your ticket?
So he used a site that is for this kind of thing, I think, not for conference tickets specifically, but that is something about like there's a minimum price and then you can pay extra. And I don't know if you're charged right away or not. I do know to his credit that he said, if something goes wrong and you don't get notified, he's going to refund everybody. So it's not like,
right,
you know, you're not going to be ripped off. Because like last year, there was one of those services that there's so many people signed up.
Right.
And this is what the dollar is trying to prevent, right? There's so many people signed up that it just completely broke down and it was useless. And so, yeah, you get your money back if something like that happens.
That's a lot of anyone who runs one of these services, unless it's like open source, like Tom Harrington, our friend Tom has a you know, some kind of just like script that he shares,
right?
And there's like it's he's very upfront about it. He's like, this is, I'm not supporting this because you know it's not my fault if you don't get notified, and
right,
but he's not free, charging anybody either. So
well, I think it's built on boxcar notifications, right? So that they'll deal with the actual like giving you a, doing a push notification to your device.
Mm-hmm.
Boxcar, which of course has box in the name, so will be acquired by Dropbox very soon.
Thinking about it, I said I'm leaving it to fate. I don't really believe in fate, so I guess thinking about it a little bit more, I am committed to, if I get the chance to buy a ticket, to buy it, because even though I have mixed feelings about the cost and, you know, worthwhileness of WWDC in light of the fact that the videos are available like a week later, I sort of feel now that the limited chance of going means that if you get the chance, you just take it, right? Because it's better to take the, but then on the flip side, I'm not taking any of these measures like signing up for a service to announce it to me. So I'm sort of like saying, on the one hand, if you get the chance, you should take it, but I'm also being very non-aggressive about getting the chance.
Well, maybe that's a good compromise.
That's a good balance. Yeah. It's very fate-like thinking. So I need to think about that. But anyway, I hope we both get tickets, and I hope this is finally the year that they give out free hardware after we get a ticket.
That hasn't happened in a decade.
No, so. and it won't, and it shouldn't actually. But anyway, So Manton, speaking of limited admissions policies, app.net has been doing some pretty interesting things with their free account memberships. You know, like anybody who just goes to app.net today can sign up as you always have been able to for a paid account. And then a few weeks ago, they introduced this idea of the free accounts, which obviously have limited, you know, capacities, and you can only follow 50 people, I think. But the way they've been doing this has been very interesting. They gave everybody who was a paid member like some invite codes to invite friends. And then something they started in the past week or two, I thought was really clever, was they started giving some people like special invite URLs, which are like a landing page where you can, you know, Macworld or somebody can say like, hey, if you want to join app.net for free, just go to this URL, and they gave us 1,000 invites or whatever.
Yeah, it's a easier way to handle this, I think, than sending individual invites out. I've sent a few out, and I have many more that I could send out, but since I don't really post to other social networks, it's kind of difficult to know where to post them or who to send them to.
Right.
So we have one of these URLs now for Core Intuition listeners, and we're going to tweet it. So if anyone wants to join app.net that hasn't yet, we'll put that out there when the show goes live, and you can sign up for a free account. And free accounts are pretty good. Like you said, you can't follow very many people, but you do get file storage. I think you get 500 meg file storage for free, and compared to the paid account is 10 gig or something like that. So it's not as much, but it is there. I mean, it actually, you know, that there's actually something to these accounts. And I mentioned the file storage just because I think a lot of interesting things are about to happen with file storage.
Yeah.
People, you were seeing, you know, every week now, someone coming out with a new app that uses the file storage to put files up there. Simple things like when you post a photo, you know, put the photo on the file storage and link to it. But other things, just for sharing arbitrary files, syncing things might happen on top of this.
There was that climber app. Did you see that? That's like somebody's take on Vine, basically. It's like just going down the list of things Twitter can do, I guess, and and making app.net versions of it. But the fact is, what's fascinating to me is that the infrastructure of app.net means somebody, a third party, can come along and make essentially Vine that's built entirely on app.net's infrastructure with no permission from app.net to add a new, like, you know, attach a video to a tweet type of behavior.
And the hosting is just so much more manageable, right? You don't, I mean, hosting video is, even 11-second or 5-second video is a big problem for most people that don't have venture capital funding. So the fact that you don't have to worry about that is huge.
Yeah, you just push it off on the users of the service, which is great. I mean, that's why they signed up. They wanted to control their social network and their storage. So anyway, as Manton said, we have one of these special invite codes. We're going to tweet it from our Core Int Twitter account so that you don't hear it on this podcast years from now and assume that it's still valid. It's only good for 100 invites, but I think that'll get quite a few of you into the service if you haven't tried it yet and been meaning to check it out.
And I do have some extras too. If it does run out and it doesn't work for you, send me a quick message or email and I'll be happy to invite other listeners to app.net so you can try it.
Awesome. Well, Manton, I will see you on app.net. That's obviously where you spend most of your casual tweet-like time these days.
Yep. I'll see you there and talk to you next week.
Great. Take care.
Bye.